Chapter 5. The Possessed. 12:06 a.m. Cassandra was late despite her professed hatred of the practice. Trace loitered in the lonely lobby of what he now knew as the Trevex B building, the same place he had filled out his short-lived questionnaire earlier that day. Lavender had shepherded him and the rest of the cherubs to the Trevex D building, where they spent the day watching orientation films and listening to pep talks about their new lives, abilities, and opportunities. Some of the poor cherubs still hadn't accepted their awakening, and Trace caught one bewildered woman pinching the flesh on the back of her hand in an attempt to rouse herself from a dream. The subject of dreads and other minions of evil didn't make the training docket that day. They probably wanted to pump up the newbies before scaring them out of their wits. One thing Archon Ramus made crystal clear that day was that no one was to leave the Trevex complex until they were ordered to. The only intimation from the Ash Angel leadership that things on the outside had turned dangerous. In his brief conversations with the other cherubs, Trace kept Lear's information about the Blank Massacre to himself, though the topic of his auralessness left little room for much else in his small talk with his training group. The best news, though, was that Ash Angels received divine gifts, 7 of them, during their second life, though Blanks only received 6. Some were gifted visions, some strength or speed. Some Ash Angels could hallow places and exorcise evil spirits, and some could actually blast dark creatures with divine light. Most Ash Angels received their first gift during the first month, though Blanks, for some unknown reason, had to wait much longer, usually over a year. For every gift, officially called a bestowal, they received, they achieved a level of ascendancy, an unofficial rank of sorts. Once an Ash Angel received all their bestowals, they would live out one more year and then ascend from the earth as a real angel. Gasps of wonderment and scrunched faces of skepticism greeted the news. Perhaps the disbelievers just needed a brief encounter with the front bumper of a speeding Buick. Trace glanced at his watch and checked the parking lot again. No Cassandra. He snatched a Trevex brochure from the rack at the information desk and headed over to a kiosk near a single humming light that provided the only illumination in the darkened lobby. He'd learned that Trevex was a fully functional and prosperous propane company with regional branches all over the United States and Canada. Offices and warehouses spread far and wide provided convenient bases of operation near every major population center. From some of the training films, Trace learned that Trevex wasn't the only Ash Angel enterprise in operation. The Ash Angel organization had infiltrated numerous groups and companies, including law enforcement and government. A silver Cadillac sports coupe sped into the parking lot and screeched to a halt in front of the double glass doors. Trace returned the brochure to its slot and walked out as Cassandra rolled down the passenger side window. She was dressed to kill, hair down and curled, makeup expertly applied.
"Hurry up, Jarhead, we're late. I hate being late."
Trace jogged over and hopped in, Cassandra flooring it before he could get the door closed.
"You told me to meet you in the lobby at 12. I was there. You were supposed to be at Trevex D with the rest of the cherubs."
"Sorry, we were in B when you gave me the order to meet you at the lobby."
The tight red dress and high heels Cassandra wore brought back memories of Teresa, and Cassandra seemed significantly bustier than she had that morning.
"Eyes front, Marine," she scolded. "Speaking of B's and D's, we can make them bigger and smaller by moving fat around. Didn't they do body transformation training today?"
"I think they are doing that right now," Trace explained.
"Maybe you should take me over to Building D and you can take off and go dancing or whatever."
"I'd love to get rid of you for the evening, but Ramus told me to train you, so here we are."
She braked hard at the guard shack and waited for the bar to go up before gunning it again.
"Look, here's the thing. You can change the way your body looks at will within the general confines of your own genetics. You can be fat, you can be skinny, long hair, short hair, stubbly or clean shaven. You can even be a child or an old man. You can generate and move fat around and tone muscle to change your appearance. Unfortunately, that leaves the fellas out when it comes to male enhancement. Sorry. You can fart at will, though.
Most guys enjoy that better.
He decided not to try that immediately. The training had alluded to these tricks of appearance earlier, but not in detail. Trace was impressed and wondered if his time wouldn't be better spent with the rest of the incoming cherubs. Cassandra was dressed for a date, and not with him. Unlike Lear, she was a compulsive speeder, whipping down the lonely two-lane highway at near three-digit speeds.
"So where exactly are you taking me?" Trace asked. "Rules said the cherubs weren't allowed outside the complex for at least a month."
"You a rules kind of guy? Salute and obey orders?" "Well, whatever. Look, half of those cherubs in there will spend their time sitting in offices or pretending to have average, normal lives. You will spend your time out here, out in the dark. Have you seen one yet?"
"One what?"
"A dread."
"No, Lear just drove me straight to—"
"Right, you need to see one. Traditionally, they've been solitary creatures, but these days, we might find two or three or four together. You might have heard that they've suddenly learned organization and group tactics."
The danger of dreads had occupied his thoughts during the empty stretches of time between films and lectures. Since the instructors hadn't addressed the issue of evil creatures, Trace could only speculate on what threat they actually posed. Ash Angel life appeared full of purpose. What did awakened evil creatures do with their time? Hunt Ash Angels? Play the slots at Las Vegas? Tangle extension cords?
"So where does one go to find dreads?" Trace asked.
"That should be easy to figure out, Jarhead," Cassandra answered. "Though I'm afraid it will require some actual thought on your part, so good luck."
"Walmart on Black Friday?" he joked.
Her expression remained as frosty as ever.
"Great, a Jarhead comedian," she replied.
"The name is Trace," he said. Was annoying him with a marine nickname some kind of test, or was she just trying to piss him off?
Once they graduated from training, all the cherubs would choose an Ash Angel name and receive a cover name to use when mixing with normals, but till then, they referred to each other by their first names. She didn't blink.
"So, Jarhead, you gonna tell me why Darcy shot you? I'm guessing you were protecting someone from Darcy, so who was it? Your lover? You cheating on Darcy or with Darcy or something?"
Trace frowned. Cassandra was helping him learn that an Ash Angel could have feelings far from divine. The military had acquainted him with the tough trainer bit, and he expected no less. But he suspected her abrasive attitude came from an abrasive personality rather than the artifice of some teaching technique. Bringing up Darcy crossed the line.
"None of your damn business," he said.
"Still hurts, huh?"
Cassandra said, and not like she cared.
"Look, why don't you practice trying to make your fingernails grow and shrink? That's where they usually start in class. It takes most Ash Angels a couple months to be able to transform with any kind of speed. In your case, it will probably take longer."
"Why, are blanks at a disadvantage?"
"No, just you."
Trace decided not to engage Cassandra in conversation any more than he had to, and focused on his fingernails. How did one make fingernails grow, much less move fat around the body or age oneself? He concentrated on his fingers for a full 5 minutes as if trying to burn holes in them with lasers in his eyes while Cassandra drove closer to the bright lights of the beckoning city. Not so much as a sliver of growth.
"Look, Jarhead," Cassandra said.
"Trace."
"Jarhead, it's a matter of visualization and imagination, not just a matter of will. You have to envision what you want them to look like and then bend your will to the vision. Forget morphing for a minute. Let's try something all the boys like. Reach under the seat. There's a gun there."
Trace leaned over and jammed his arm under the seat, feeling the cold metal beneath it. He pulled out an odd-looking gun that looked like a .44 mag revolver on steroids. The metal was blued, weighed a ton, and was loaded with some of the biggest bullets he had ever seen in a handgun. He turned it over and inspected it.
"This must have a hell of a kickback. What caliber is this?" Trace asked.
.50.
"Nice."
"Yep. It's loud and kicks like an ornery mule. Doesn't have a great range either, but that's not the point. Dreads and Ash Angels are hardly fazed by small caliber weapons. Our bodies are tougher than mortals' bodies.
Tissue damage is nothing. Lungs, heart, organs, and blood vessels don't matter. You've got to break bones and shred muscles. You'd be better off fighting a dread with a medieval battle axe, or even a garden variety sledgehammer than most handguns and rifles out there. What you've got there, we call a BBG. It means Big Blessed Gun. Not sure who thought up that stupid name, but here we are. It also comes in rifle and shotgun varieties. The weapons nuts at research have made a variety of these things with different calibers and configurations, trying to find the sweet spot for hurting dreads. The guns are at their best when they use blessed ammunition, but you've got to submit a special requisition to get that.
Blessed ammunition? Trace asked.
Yeah. There are ash angels who have a gift that allows them to bless objects, including bullets. There aren't many ash angels with the gift, and they can only bless a few objects a day. Let me tell you, though, blessed bullets really shred the dreads.
Why not just bless the gun?
Wow, she replied. A decent question. Blessing the gun makes the shooter more accurate, but doesn't help do more damage. Anyway, shooting these guns can take some getting used to.
He could believe it. Can't exactly stick this thing in the back of your pants.
Nope. We typically use backpacks or gym bags or old lady purses. That gun is yours. You're welcome.
Thanks.
She turned off the highway and down onto the surface streets. It was 12:30. Festive Christmas garlands and bows hung from street lamps and glowed in the darkness, along with storefront signs stating closed. Few vehicles and even fewer people frequented the roads, but Cassandra navigated toward a more industrial side of town with boxy buildings and ruined sidewalks. Trash clung to chain-link fences shot through with weeds, and wooden poles supported dim streetlights and bowing wires. After another turn, they neared a two-story brick building where the street was unexpectedly lined with cars, nice cars, parked thickly. A sagging fence separated the sidewalk and the street from empty railroad tracks.
Where are we going?
She deftly parallel parked in an impossible space between a Mercedes and a Mazda RX-8 and dropped the mirror from the sun visor, checking her makeup. Okay, when you think about religious stories and teachings, you'll notice some words pop up a lot, regardless of the culture they come from. Words like light, love, peace. If you're not on that road, where are you going? Dark, lust, loud. God is about peace, be still. The devil is about peace, be gone. Around the corner there is a club called The Orient. It's exclusive, it's poorly lit, and it's for rich men and women who are bored with each other, got it?
I'm not dressed for this.
No, you're not. That's why I parked here. See that metal door on the side? Wait there. I go in the front, then I let you in the service entrance. Then we both have a nice look around. Don't do anything stupid.
Trace had no idea what constituted stupid in this situation.
She hopped out after grabbing a tiny, fashionable purse from the console. Trace jumped out and crossed the street, leaving the gun in the car. He didn't have anywhere to put it. Cassandra didn't look back, strutting with a practiced air in her high heels as she turned the corner toward the front entrance. Her figure and flattering dress kept his attention. She wouldn't encounter any difficulties getting in the door, though she might have problems peeling the man off her to get clear enough to let him into the side door. He crossed the street and leaned against the rough brick wall, the dull thumping of a monstrous subwoofer inside shaking the very structure and the concrete beneath it. Road noise from a nearby street and the echo of distant sirens added their din to the constant rumble of the music pounding inside. Trace shoved his hands in his pockets in an attempt at the mysterious art of inconspicuous loitering. Doing something to look like you were doing nothing proved strangely difficult. He wished he had a phone to pretend to use and was grateful he didn't have an audience. Laughter from his left spurred him to start walking toward the front of the club like another patron. What came around the corner hitched his step. A richly dressed man in dark slacks and a silky blue shirt had his arm around a brunette in a black dress. They laughed drunkenly, swaying as they walked, eyes on the broken sidewalk. Something clung to the man. A charcoal-black, wispy form that was roughly humanoid, the edges of its body churning out a ghostly gray smoke that persisted only a few inches away from its form. It had thrust its head into the man's head and was merged with it, while its limbs snaked around and clung to him in a crab-like fashion. An ethereal left arm entered the man's chest as if to squeeze his heart. Trace remembered too late to act casual. This was a possessed, what Lear had described as a ghost hanging out of a person. What Trace had imagined it might look like was more fifth-grade Halloween party scary than the actual ghoulish terror that now left him frozen. He fake coughed. He was a blank. It couldn't tell he was an ash angel. The feeling of evil swelled palpably as it neared, an overwhelming sense of wrongness squeezing Trace's gut. Trace lifted his head as he neared the couple, and the man looked up at him, his eyes pitch black from sclera to pupil. The pinpoint of red at the center of each eye burned with malice. Trace's jaw dropped, and he flinched. The man stopped, a displeased look darkening his face. He pushed the woman away so savagely she slammed into a blue BMW parked on the curb and fell hard. The piercing car alarm drowned out her cries of pain. "A blank," the man said, smile sinister. Trace put his hands up and backed away. "I don't know what you're on, bro. Just leave me alone." The possessed didn't buy it. Its dark, glassy eyes drew Trace's gaze, those pinpoints of red filling his vision. Then the possessed rushed him. He was a Marine. He was trained to defend himself. But the ghastly shape and the burning eyes had him rooted until it was too close. Trace swung an ill-timed fist at its face, but the hybrid creature crushed him in a vice-like grip. They fell together to the ground, the possessed on top of him, Trace's arms pinned to his sides. The possessed leered at him, the tiny red pinpoint of light in its eyes expanding and flaring like a camera flash. The spectral glow enveloped Trace's vision, and a sense of disconnectedness and darkness overwhelmed his senses as a familiar, painful scene materialized around him. The Fighting South High Eagles had just lost the homecoming game. Trace headed out of the locker room and tried to avoid everyone. It was his fault. He was covering the receiver who'd caught the winning touchdown in the final 2 seconds of the game, a 10-yard pass that turned into a 60-yard gain and a score. Trace had bought the quarterback's pump fake and hesitated only for a second. That sliver of time was all it took. The receiver got 2 steps on him, and it was over. Humiliation and defeat. Trace shoved his hands in his pockets and banged out of the gymnasium door. His disappointed dad would be waiting for him in the parking lot. Most people had cleared out by the time Trace left, and for all the earlier ruckus, this side of the high school was quiet. He cursed himself over and over for buying that fake. It was his second year, and he should have known better. Voices around the corner brought him up short. His dad was talking to Jerry, their next-door neighbor, in a disappointed tone. "Bet you wish you had Brandon back out there on the field, don't you, Walter?" Jerry commented derisively. Brandon, Trace's older brother, had been the quarterback on the team for 2 glorious years of victory and state championships. Trace had hardly existed in his dad's world during those seasons. "Yeah," his dad agreed. "Trace ain't much to brag about at the bar. He didn't even get a date for the dance. Not that any girl would want to be seen with him tonight. At least I got 1 stud in the litter. Most guys don't even get that." Trace's vision returned to the dark street. He gasped, finding himself curled up and shaking on the concrete. The possessed no longer lay on top of him, but it was still hard to focus or move, the numbness and despair crippling him. The inadequacy, the crushed self-esteem, and the embarrassment of that night had destroyed him. Those poisonous feelings, as amped up as the music in the building, blitzed his mind and his heart with not only renewed, but redoubled power. He squirmed under the dead weight of his own worthlessness, dimly aware of the man and the attached spirit sprinting around the corner toward the front of the Orient. Mustering all his strength, he scooted up against the wall, unable to focus on anything but his pain. He blinked his eyes, but everything wobbled and blurred. Dimly, he heard a car honk as it drove by.
The drunken woman the possessed had shoved to the ground stood gagging and retching on the curb. For an instant, the music from inside got louder. Cassandra stepped into his wobbly vision.
"Get up, Jawhead," she yelled. "We gotta go now."
Jerry's words echoed in Trace's mind. "Bet you wish you had Brandon back out there on the field, don't you, Walter?" She grabbed Trace by the arm, her touch returning some sense to his mired mind. He struggled to his feet, and she dragged him toward the car. Trace glanced back, the sounds of running feet closing on them. A single figure dressed in a suit rounded the corner at a sprint. Trace's eyes widened. No gray, shadowy form clung to this man, but a red aura encompassed him, a burning glow of desecration. Fear gripped Trace as another man with the same frightful mien barreled around the corner holding a nightstick. Dreads. Cassandra used their forward momentum to grab the back of Trace's shirt, and she shoved him unceremoniously over the hood of the car.
"Get in, Trace! Focus! Get in!"
But Trace couldn't focus. If he hadn't bought that fake, his dad would have been proud. No, that wasn't true. He still would have liked Brandon better anyway. Trace gritted his teeth. He had to help. Fighting his negative thoughts, he struggled to get up off the ground. Nothing wanted to move. With sheer will, he got to his knees and yanked the door open. The first dread shoved Cassandra into the driver's side of the car with a crushing blow, shattering the window. Cassandra recovered as he tried to pin her against the vehicle, but she used his force to help propel her inside the car through the broken window. Her right arm flailed backward as she searched for the gun, her left hand gripping the steering wheel for support. The gun waited on the floor, and her finger snagged the trigger guard as the dread tried to pull her back out by her thrashing legs. Fixing her grip, she pulled the weapon around and fired off a shot that boomed like holy thunder inside the car. The massive bullet hit her assailant's shoulder, shattering it with a crack and launching him backward into the street. Cassandra righted herself, and Trace flopped into the seat, thoughts swirling and muddy. She squeezed off another round and hit the dread with the nightstick in the hip. He stumbled and fell. She tossed the hot gun on Trace's lap and started the engine, ramming the Cadillac into the car behind them to create space. Tires screamed as they lurched forward, the car in front of them closing Trace's door as they whipped past it. The lights of the street were a blur as Cassandra laid on the speed and zigzagged down streets seemingly at random. She smacked his cheek roughly with her hand.
"You in there, Trace? Trace!"
But all he heard was his father's words.
"At least I got one stud in the litter,"